So, this is the tool to use for testing your OPs. And I would strongly urge you to, if you have someone who wants to run an OP in your environment, you should have that someone go here and verify that the OP is actually working according to the standard. It actually says it's for testing. It can be used for certifying, that is, if you are gone through all the tests and you got sort of green light on all the tests, you can actually ask the OpenID Foundation to certify you, which means you get the badge, which you can put on your web page, something like that says that you are certified. And in some cases, that's very nice to have, I guess. In other, it doesn't matter so much. But you can definitely test. You can definitely test sort of your implementation, and not do anything further than that. But test you should. So what you can do here from here is the main sort of starting page. You can either, and you should note that I'm not a GUI developer, so this is not sort of very fancy. But anyway, if you already have a configuration, maybe you should start here. If you don't have a configuration, you will go here, and then you get to answer some questions. And this is your URL. So this is basically not well. If you want to do dynamic discovery, you have to enter an issuer URL. So I just add something here. I'm not going to. I can have. If I'm testing an OP and I want to do some different configurations, I can have sort of the same basic test configuration, but I can have different tags such that I use my OP in different ways or something like that. Then I can choose what my OP supports, whether it's WebFinger, dynamic provider discovery, client registration, and so forth. And then I specify if I want to use what kind of return type I want to use. This is the default, say. And when I submit that, I get back something here. I have to, some of the information I've entered is already here, but then I have to add some extra information. Since I said I want to do WebFinger, I have to give a sort of this would look like an email address, or there is another which I didn't mention. But the other thing you can do is you can add a URL, which then can also be the basis for doing WebFinger query. This is mostly it's a sort of if you want, there are some extras. If you want to do certification, you don't have to support encryption, for instance. This, if you want to do test for encryption also. There are some extra tests which are not part of it. It's just nice to have tests. Insecure, it's sort of, if you have an OP that has a self-signed certificate, there is no way one can verify that that's a real certificate. So in the same way as if you use curl or something like that, sort of, you have to specify that you want to do it insecure. So in this case, if you have a self-signed certificate, you should have true set here. If you support a non-signature, that's special. And then if you support signature and some other stuff that you may want to enter. And then you can save and start that. I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to go back. So this is a list of all the configuration that exists. This is the issuer IDs for all the different configurations. There are a total of somewhere around 900, I think, today people are using. I choose my own here. I only have one tag here. The other, I don't have more than one. And I can delete and reconfigure here if I want to. Otherwise, I just go sort of do restart of it. And I go to the test instance. And here I get some information about what these tests are based on, that I want to do code. In this case, I define static. I don't do Webfinger. I do dynamic discovery, dynamic registration. I do encryption and signing, and I do all the extra tests. And then based on that, I get the list of tests. And I'm not sure how many these are, but they're probably around 70 or something like that. And at the end, I have the legend. So if it's black, it means I haven't run that test. If it's green, it means I ran it and it was a success. Yellow means it's something wasn't really as expected. It's probably not an error, but and this could definitely be things like I asked for these claims, but I didn't get all of them. That's a typical warning. Red is failed, and question mark is, I don't really know what happened here. It wasn't completed for one or other reason. In most cases, it's like it was some kind of bug somewhere. So if I ran one of them now, I started this client. This client is this test tool is working as an RP, so it connects to the OP and it's done authentication request in this case. You will see it. And now I have to log in. No. And it worked. So I get the green light. But that's not the most interesting thing. When I've done one of these, I get this I sort of for information over here. And if I click that, I can see exactly what happened. I get some test information about sort of issuer, the test description, the timestamp when these tests were run, the test ID, and some other information. And then I get specifically sort of from time zero, first Webfinger, which was not supposed to be done, not expected to do. And then second one is discovery. And it was using this information, issuer and this Argaton Sachs address. And the response I got back was, this is the URL and the status codes were 200, of course. It's missing some info. Okay, so then it continued. I don't know why that isn't shown here. That's the bug. I have to fix that. So next thing is does dynamic discovery of the information. So it will ask this URL, this OpenID configuration. Okay. And it will get back the configuration, the metadata for the OP. You've seen this before. And then you have the registration. And you can see what it registered with, what kind of information, grant types, response type, and so forth. And it got back some response. And then you do, and that was the it does the registration, and it got back the response was in 201, which is the HTTP way of saying something was created. That's according to the standard, it should be that way. And you get the registration response. And then the authorization request, in this case it sends client ID, nonce, and state, and then redirect URI, response type, and scope. The scope in this case is just OpenID, which it has to be in there if it's OpenID Connect. And then I get back a response eventually, then authorization response, which contains the client ID. Again, and the code, the issuer, scope, and state. Adding issuer and client ID here, authorization response, wasn't part of the original standard. So those has been added afterwards to mitigate some security problems. So here you get sort of all the information you need to understand what actually happened. We can take something from the user info endpoint. They can do that one. So in this case, this is single sign-on. You don't see the user sort of username and password again. You get directly the result. And again, you can go to the information. You can see sort of what happened. And here, the first things are just the same. There's no difference from earlier. But then you have an access token request, which you didn't see on the previous test. And you get the access token response. It contains an access token, you have the ID token. In this case, did I mention that? So if you're using CodeFlow, you will get the ID token together with the access token from the token endpoint. And here it has unpacked and verified the ID token for you. So you will see the content of the ID token. And then user info. Nothing special there. So it does the request. The authentication here is bearer, and the value of bearer here is the access token. So it's P6HX, it's the same as the other. And then the only thing I get back here is subject, which is just an identifier. And then I'm done. The thing here, things here at the end, are I expect, or rather the test tool expect, after everything has been run, that the RP should be in a specific state. That is, it should have some necessary information if everything has gone okay. So I have the possibility of running a number of tests at the end, which is not involving the OP. It's all run on the RP just to check that the state is okay. And then everything is okay, you get the passed here at the end. So that's it. So if you go through all these tests here, and then you collect the information, this log information, and you send that to the OpenID Foundation, and together with some other documents you have to sign, you can be certified. But so we should actually. Look at that. So these are the OpenID Connect providers that are certified as of today. So there are a number of them. it's not a massive amount. I mean, you remember that perhaps that I said that we had about 900 different test issuers defined, and this is about 40 that has been certified. So there should be a lot more. But there are some interesting things here, like the Microsoft actually have ADFS Windows Server 2016 verified for some of the profiles, not all of them. I know that Mike Jones, who are hired by Microsoft, is working diligently on getting them to certify more and actually getting to certify for all of the profiles. But so far, he hasn't been successful. One thing we are discussing here is whether we should have versioning of the certification. You can see here some of them are pretty old. Like mine are from September 2015, so that's nearly 2 years ago. And this version of PyODC is sort of, it's not the latest version. So we'll probably have continuous integration using this. The only problem is as you saw, that sort of a person has to sit and click on one of these in order for something to happen. And I know you can do this by using some tools. You can automate this. And I know people who are starting to work on that. But this, you should take notice and actually make your those participating in the federation that wants to have an OP in the federation, in your federation, they should be certified or at least tested before you let them in. We have now a similar type of tool for testing RP libraries. But it's harder to show because everything is from the command line, you can see, so you can't see actually a lot. But it's there, and that's definitely used in continuous integration for a handful of libraries. I know we were talking about the implementation that's been done for phones, smartphones, by Google, and that library called AppAuth is now such that whenever they do an update of that, they are running the tests at the same time. It's part of their unit test suite, you could say. Any questions on this? Nope. You've been pretty good at posting questions. I'm happy with that. So you're doing nicely. Anyway, but the work hasn't stopped yet. Actually, there are people who are complaining because there are so many things going on. So they are not being able to keep up. But these are the working groups that presently exist within the OpenID Foundation. So the first one there, the AB Connect, is the one that is dealing with the standard as such. So they are doing the basic OID specifications. They are dealing with session management and the different logout specification. There are actually three different ways of handling single logout in OpenID Connect. And the reason is that there isn't one that fits all. So there are use cases where one is okay, but not another one. So therefore we have three different versions of doing that. My sort of federation work is part of the basic Connect work group. The other one is something called account user. I don't know if you heard about that, but that's something that comes from Google. And it's about this problem that when you have this application, it asks you to authenticate, and you get this list of authentication services you can use, and usually it's Google and Facebook, and then possibly LinkedIn and Twitter or something like that. But it's a very limited set, and of course the question is who is to decide which the set is supposed to be, and so forth. So that's a big question, NASCAR question. So the account user tries to do something about that, and it leverage what OpenID Connect can do with WebFinger, so you can actually sort of enter your own OP into this list of possible authentication services to use. And now lately this has been moving over now to something called Open YOLO. And it's YOLO means you only log in once. That's the sort of YOLO originally meant you only live once, but now it's you only log in once. And it's if you have, I'm sure most of you have password managers. Like I use 1Password, and this is sort of that the same thing, but now in your browser. This is something very new, and I haven't seen it gone anywhere yet. So, contracts, I don't know what it is. Basically, I don't know what it is. It's supposed to be something new, but I couldn't find any information about it. Enhanced authentication profile, it's again token binding. I spoke about that earlier, and now it's how do you map that into the tokens by themselves. And then authentication context, class reference values, specifications of those. But basically this group is working with token binding. It's a problem there because presently I think there is only one real implementation. And that's made by a guy working for Ping Identity, so he has a problem finding someone else to test his implementation against. Fast Federation, Fast Fed. It's a commercial initiative. The use case is that you have a cloud-based service, cloud-based SP, and then you have lots of organizations that have their own IDP or OP that wants to use this cloud-based service. So you have an SP and you have several IDPs, OPs that wants to connect to that. Now, this isn't really a federation, so it's not a federation operated anywhere here. So all of these connections between an OP and an RP, for instance, is point to point. So all of them have, all of these guys running IDPs or OPs, they have to register with the service provider. It turns out that some of these service providers, they have made it very easy. So if you are using Box, for instance, it's pretty easy. But there are some others who are not so easy. So I know that one guy who described that he tried to connect their IDP to an SP, and after 4 hours, he gave up. He couldn't get it working. He cut and paste, but it still didn't work. So what this FastFed is trying to do is to make this easier. So they are defining a profile of OpenID Connect, to actually profile of SAML too, to make it easier. So it can't do everything. And they're also defining a way of describing the attribute mapping. So, because the attributes that this guy in here is using and the attributes that these guys are using may not be the same. So you have to do some kind of mapping. So if anyone here remembers Daniela Pern from Germany, she actually wrote a PhD about this problem, exactly this problem. And I'm sure these guys haven't read her PhD. And it's like 500 pages, so I don't think they want to. But she laughed very happily when I told her about this, so when I met her the other week. So, because she knew it was a real problem. Yes. So I don't know, they call it Fast Federation. I don't know it is that it is a federation, but it doesn't matter. Financial API, this is also something new. I don't know if it's common in your countries. It's not so common in Sweden that I know. But this thing, personal asset management, is very common in the US. And what happens is that there is someone, some company that comes to you and says, okay, if you give me your username and password to your bank account, and your username and password to your credit company or things like that, I can give you a very personalized view on your finances. And people do that. They do it. They give them the username and password. But that's, of course, not the way you want to do it. So in steps OAuth in this case. So they are basing this on OAuth. So that was the basic use case. But then there are lots of other things that came from there. So you have account opening, payments, loan application, and things like that. So interestingly enough, it turned out that EU has a payment service directive number 2. And you're all very familiar with this, I guess. No. I didn't know anything about this until 2 weeks ago, but there is actually. And it's supposed to be in effect by the end of 2017. They have said that the data standard is JSON, the API standard is REST, and the security standard is OAuth and OpenID Connect. Wow! So it's the EU directive. So start implementing. So the financial API that they're working on is the read-only API, and then there are some stuff about open data and reading and managing that. The interesting thing, and this is hardly readable, but this is how they are doing their profiling. They're specifying specific things, like it shall support both public and confidential clients. I haven't talked about that, but public clients are typically clients that can't handle crypto very nicely because they can't handle keys. But this is interesting. Shall authenticate a confidential client at the token endpoint using one of the following methods: TLS mutual authentication, or EVS client assertion using the client secret or private key, or a private key as specified in OpenID Connect. So they are limiting the choices, making it more secure. They're saying that the RSA key should be larger than 2K. They specify the sizes of the elliptic curve key, and so forth. So they are tightening the screws here. So there are things that OAuth and OpenID Connect allows, and these guys say no. You have to be more secure. But and this is still the read. This is just reading information. When you add write, it gets even tougher. Then, for instance, you can't send authorization requests sort of in the clear anymore. You have to use request to request URI. And when it comes to response type, you have to use code ID token or code ID token token. All the other are not allowed. And the reason for that is security. Because as I said, and you probably don't remember it, but in this case, if you have a code ID token, then what happens is, according to OpenID Connect standard, in the ID token, you get a hash of the code. And since the ID token is assigned JSON Web Token, the code value is sort of protected. So no one can change the code value without you figuring it out. And the same if you want to use token and code, both of them are then hashed and stored in the ID token, which is signed. And they also add another hash, so you have a hash of the state parameter. So it's even more secure then. And here, they say you have holder of key mechanisms, and it's mutual TLS or token binding, auth token binding. And level of assurance 3, so you see, they add a number of things that are tightening the security, which is good, because if I want to use this for dealing with money in my bank, I really want it to be secure. But this is typically what's happening now. I've also been involved, and you will see that later, for instance. Yeah, this HART, the HART project, which is about healthcare in the US mostly, but there are other countries looking at this. And they're specifying profiles for OAuth, for OpenID Connect, and for Yuma. And what the profiles are doing is, again, tightening the screws. They have views on state, for instance, how randomized it is, state values, nonce values. So there are lots of things like that. There's also one working group working with the government assurance profile. So they are trying to write a profile then for governments. So the governments that are involved right now is the US government and the UK government. I don't think there are actually any more. So it's a small group, even though they are looking across the globe. But we'll see. Moderna is the Mobile Connect, the guys who are defining the standard for mobile operators, for phones and such. They want to use OpenID Connect because they want to be identity providers. So the deal is that what they want to happen is that you have a user who has a telephone or a pad or something like that, wants to use the service, and the user can then choose to use the telephone as the authenticator. So you use the telephone and you can use information that the phone has, like the telephone number, or there are other numbers on the phone which are more unique and stable than the phone number. This system is running right now in a couple of Asian countries, like Sri Lanka, it's one of them, where they have like 30 million users or something like that. The interesting thing here is I don't know if I had that. Yeah, right. So the GSM wanted, they created Mobile Connect. But then OpenID Foundation found out that they did that. So they created the Moderna working groups to get it right, because OpenID Foundation didn't trust the GSM to get it right. So there is this working group, and they have members both from the foundation, you could say, and from GSMA to get sort of the OpenID Connect stuff really right, which then GSMA could use afterwards. So in the future, you may have, as one identity provider in your country, the mobile operators, or, I mean, one or more native applications that's gone. Risk and incident sharing and coordination, has an interesting history. Every year, twice a year, one time in the autumn, one time in the spring, there is something called the IIW, Internet Identity Week. And it's a week, actually it's 4 days normally, in Mountain View, in Silicon Valley in California. And you get all these, there are like about 300 participants, something like that. It's an unconference, which means there is no program when the conference starts. So every morning, people are sitting down and coming up with proposals for discussion points. And then sort of the group of 300 people is organizing the whole day. And it works out. And they usually are like 6 or 7 parallel sessions, and there's about 5 sessions. Streams per day. So there was this, I think it was like about autumn of 2 years ago, 2015, there was a lunch meeting, and the participants were Facebook and Google and AOL and some other guys. And they had this problem that there are lots of people who have a user at one of them, and then if they want to reset the password, they have given sort of a email address that belongs to another one of them. So like if you were to create a Facebook user and then set the reset password, send that to my Google account. That's actually quite common that people have something like that. Now, if Google realizes that someone has hacked an account, shouldn't they tell Facebook such that sort of no one can use that information to hack and sort of take over a Facebook account? So that's where this came from. So they are trying, they've defined a way to, a specification for which information to share and how to send it about. But they have a number of problems. One is, of course, who will be allowed to belong to the club. Now, Facebook and Google is sort of obvious candidates, but sort of how small can you be and still be allowed to get sort of this kind of information from these guys? They don't want to send it to Washington Post, for instance, or something like that, or New York Times, when they've been hacked and lost like 50 million accounts or something. So there are things like that which is part of this discussion too. But I think that's very nice. And I think we've had sort of that discussion within Edugain. Like if one OP gets hacked, how do you tell all the SPs or RPs sort of that a specific IDP has been hacked such that the user has lost their credentials?
That's where Certify is.
Yes. So that's it. I have one more thing I'd like to talk about. You want to stretch your legs? Or should we just keep plodding? and you're falling asleep. Okay. Federations. Yay.
No one's getting excited.
No one's getting excited.
It doesn't mean you.
I was expecting like, yay, at least, at last. Waiting for this all day. OpenID, connect federations. We can skip that. Okay. So what I wanted to do when I wrote this specification a year and a half ago was I wanted to allow dynamic discovery and registration without losing trust, so it shouldn't be anonymous. I wanted to be able to enforce federation organizational policies. I wanted to allow delegation of entity registration. I didn't want everyone to go to the federation to register a new entity. I wanted to allow that to happen somewhere else. I wanted the metadata to be transport and origin independent. It should be self-contained, so whichever way I got the metadata, I should be able to trust it. If it came over a TLS protected sort of network connection, or if it came in an email or by swans, it shouldn't matter. I mean, it should be sort of contained, self-contained. So these were my design principles. In order for this to work, I had to have a number of things. I had to have a trusted third party. I tried to get around it, but I couldn't. I have some ideas about how to do this with something like a PGP group or something like that, environment. So you wouldn't have to have one trusted party, but you could have sort of a community or something like that. But for now, it's a trusted third party that's needed. And that's the federation operator, of course. I have to create a chain of verifiable claims. And I have to be able to, given that chain, to create sort of the metadata for a specific entity. All of this happens during the client and server setup. So I don't really deal with Webfinger, say, but definitely discovery and registration, that's where things are happening. After that, once you've done discovery and registration, everything is normal OpenID Connect. Nothing special. So I added a couple of things to the metadata, to both to the registration and the provider information. So I need some signing keys, and I allow them to be either by value or by reference. I can also have metadata statement, again, by value or by reference. And then there is now, according to OpenID Connect, there is something called the YWKS URI, which is where you can get and fetch some keys. But in the OpenID Connect case, what you get is a JSON document. And this is a signed such document, so it's a JWS, which I thought was better, because otherwise, why would you trust what you got? So these are the things I added. And then I added some specific client metadata things, like this is about sort of enforcing policy, and somewhat similar to entity categories, that I actually could say that this client can only use these scopes or these claims. I wanted to, in SAML you have entity categories, which actually means two things. One thing is sort of about behavior, And the other thing is about attribute release. And I want to separate them. So this is only about attribute release. So it's not about sort of, you promise you won't send this information to a third party or something like that. This is not there. Or I promise to follow the Swedish laws or whatever. So that's something else. That's not this.
Scopes and
semi-scopes
are
Groups of claims. So you have the scope.
There's no correlation.
There is no scope. Right. So scope is different. Yeah, scope is like a it's a group of claims. So let's take an example. So what do we have? Email. Is both the claims email and verified email, for instance. So it's a shorthand for claims, you could say, because you have more than one.
So it's really similar to the requested attribute summary metadata model?
Yeah, yeah. But requested attributes are like this. But this should be like, I want all the EDU person attributes. So, and now when you're sort of really almost cooking, now we get into really difficult things. So in order for get sort of to understand this, how this works, I needed some notations. So first I have a metadata statement. This is a set of claims. And a such a signing request by X is represented by ms underscore x. Signing keys that belong to x are sk x, and metadata signed by x is x, and in parentheses the metadata statement. This means that I can represent these kind of things. So I have a entity called b, and it has said some things. It has some claims, and it has some signing keys. And it has given this to another entity called A, who then can sign all of this. So this is a completely signed metadata statement. This is A, in this case, would be the federation operator. And B would be an organization. And then you can add to that. So that this is now a signed metadata statement. So that could be part of another signed metadata statement. So you have that part, and then you have a entity C who got this from B. Are you with me? Okay.
C supply the metadata statement and its key.
And its keys. Yeah. So this is a hierarchy here in effect. So you have a federation operator. And that's A in that case. You have an organization. And that's B. And then you have, say, a sysadm running a service, and that's C. This sysadm is running a RP, and it has some specific information, like redirect URIs. So that's sort of the typical MSC information. The organization, B here, what it has is information that is common for all the RPs within an organization. And it could be like terms of services. It could be what's I got. Like it could be a logotype, a logo, something that you want to show to someone else, which is belongs to the organization, doesn't belong to the RP. So this is what happens. So the organization starts by having sort of organization-wide information and its signing key, gives that to the federation operator. The federation operator checks it and makes sure it follows the federation's policy. Because otherwise the organization here could add things about like scopes or anything like the algorithms that should be, signing algorithms that should be used or something like that. That wasn't according to federation policy. Like using SHA-1 instead of SHA-256 or something like that. So after making sure that this is okay according to the federation's policy, it will sign it. The federation will sign it. That signed metadata statement that is rooted in the federation, or the federation operator, that's added to the next metadata statement, which contains then the specific information for the RP, like redirect URIs, like JWK as URI, things like that. The signing key for the RP, and then everything, basically that, is sent to the organization, verifies it, that is according to the policy of the federation, but also the policy of the organization. And then the whole caboodle is signed by the organization. Now you have a chain here, sort of signatures. You have the federation signing, which is something which is inside something which is signed by the organization. And that is sort of the important thing here. Actually, you will see, I think we skipped this. Hop to this, okay. So you have the players, you have the system administrator, and this is the, someone representing the organization, and then you have the federation. You start with organization and federation. Organization-wide information, contacts, logo, policy, terms of service, sends it to the federation. Federation verifies, possibly modifies, adds some extra information. Token input, authentication method, claims, scopes, whatever, sort of. And signs it with the key pair that it has. And the public key here should be publicly available. It's like the public key for the key that the federation operator is using for signing SAML metadata. It's somewhere on the web. Then within the organization, you have the sysadmin creating this metadata statement specific to a specific service provider, sending it to the organization. We're going back and forth when it comes to what we should name these guys, but still, I'm not sure about what's appropriate. This guy also have a public pair, of course, and the public part of that, it's not shown here, but it should actually be, yes, it's in here, So that's the, so that's public key is in there, which is then signed by the federation operator, so it's protected. So I skipped. Yeah, so there it's signed by the federation operator. And then we were inside the organization. At this point, I sort of made it that way that the organization entity checked the information that the sysadmin had been given. But it also adds this signed document signed by the Federation operator previously into that document before it signs it. So it's like Russian doll, sort of. It's one within another, and so forth. So when you want to unpack this, this is the document you're given. You take this document, which is in the signed JWS, which is inside this document, and you unpack it, and you get this information, you get this public key, and the whole thing is signed by the Federation operator. And you can verify the signature because this is a publicly available key. So you can verify the signature. Once you've done that, you can trust this public key, which is inside this document. And that key you can use to verify sort of that document. So you have a chain of signatures that you can verify by having this one key. And when you have signed and you trust all the documents that no one has tampered with them, you have the next thing, which is then you add the information that was provided by the system administrator to the information that provided by the organization, possibly modified by the Federation operator. And they together are then the metadata for the RP. And that's how it works. And you don't trust it.
Yes.
So until there's a sysadmin available who is able to provide the redirect URIs, there is nobody who can provide that redirect URI in the metadata.
No.
Right. Okay, so you need all the three actors to be in place to get a useful metadata for
it. Yes. Though you could imagine having, I've shown here there are three levels. So you have the Federation operator, which always has to be in there. And then you have level one, which is the organization, and level two, which is the sysadmin level. So you could imagine collapsing this and actually making the organization do everything, which is what you have to do today in SAML federations. But there is nothing, I wanted explicitly to allow to have this type of possibility to actually make the registration of a specific entity something that happens within the organization and it never touches the federation. So the federation can just, which is normally what it does, it verifies that an organization is playing by the rules. They are not verifying that a specific SP is playing by the rules. They are verifying the organization is doing that. So there is no difference there. But this allows you to actually do, say, this organization is Microsoft. And we think that Microsoft is playing according to rules, but Microsoft is allowed to create as many RPs and at any time as they want to without touching the Federation operator. And by doing this, like I described now, and using dynamic provider discovery and client registration, you will get the information about the part you want to talk to when you need it. And there is no metadata sent around, no big files of metadata. When you want to talk to someone, you go ask for the information, and then you verify the information, and then you start talking.
So is that metadata published by the service provider, right?
Yes. Though, as I said, there is nothing that prevents the Federation operator from saying that everyone who wants to belong to this Federation has to send the sort of signed metadata statement that is constructed here up to the Federation. So the Federation actually has everything. And then you can go and ask that entity if you want to. So there's several different models you can use on top of this for how you distribute this. Especially on the OP side, if you want to create a normal where are you from page, you would really like to know all the OPs that are registered within the Federation. In that case, you definitely want to give those to the Federation so such that it could create the where are you from page. So, so should you say a couple of words of where we are with the Xi'an project around this?
Yeah. So we have a subtask within JRA 3 task 3 of GN4 project where we're dealing explicitly with how an OpenID Connect Federation should and would work. So we have the draft by Roland, and there has been comments on that within the task. Roland has been creating a test tool for OpenID Connect Federation aware
OPs.
And we're moving forward with it with that task. The goal is that we should provide a more complete or a more commented version of the draft and a reference implementation, which would surely be a Python implementation, and the testing tool so that people can start writing their own implementations and validating that it would work in what we would describe as the blueprint architecture of an OpenID Connect Federation. And within the process, of that task, we have also set forward to facilitate not only implementers by creating libraries, but deployers by adding support to Shibboleth Identity Provider, so making Shibboleth Identity Provider OpenID Connect aware, and OpenID Connect Federation aware. And that's ongoing, and it's going pretty well, and it has the blessings of the Shibboleth Consortium. So we have a level of assurance that it will end up in the core code. Then we are working and will continue to work on making Satosa, which is a Python implementation of a proxy, and make that Satosa already supports OpenID Connect. We want to make it support Federation aware OpenID Connect OPs and RPs. And yes, there are also some parallel work on creating an interoperability profile based on the standard when that's in a more mature or later on down the road. I think that's pretty much what we have been doing over the last year.
Yeah.
Anything else I've missed?
Not really. I maybe only should note that we had hoped we would have several implementations in different languages.
Yeah, and that's still on the table.
But not as fast as we wanted.
Exactly. And we do have some code, at least in Node.js, from Andres Solberry from Uninet. Hopefully we'll get some more. So the idea is that we wanted to create a reference implementation in as many languages as possible in order to drive adoption, but that's not always easy. But at least we can say for sure, with certainty, that there will be a reference implementation in Python, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. There are, as Janis mentioned, there is two Finns. Well, you didn't mention what two Finns, but there are actually two persons working on
Janne Lauros and Henri Mikkonen.
Yeah,
have been working on the Shibboleth identity program.
Yes, exactly. They've been working with Shibboleth for a number of years now, I think. So they're actually doing a federation aware addition, OpenID Connect federation aware addition to Shibboleth. And so that's very nice, and that will help a lot of people. Apart from that, sort of the thing that we can provide is an OP implementation in Python based on the PyOIDC, which is made by you.
Yes.
And then we have the Satosa proxy.
Exactly. Those two basically share the same code. So it's the PyOP library that we that is being used both in Satosa and the standalone OP, and that is being made federation aware at this time, so that we will provide that for sure. And the reason behind that is that we see that there's no way for us to move from SAML-based federations to OpenID Connect federations within a minute or within a week or within a year or 5 years, for that matter. So the two ways we can move forward is adding support for OpenID Connect federation in software that people are using already, Shibboleth Identity Provider, and making it easy for people to deploy proxies in front of their islands of SAML entities and that can talk OpenID Connect on the other side with new OpenID Connect RPs that want to participate in the federation. So since we have identified these two ways of introducing OpenID Connect federations and driving the adoption, that's where we focusing our efforts at this time.
Yeah, I think you should note that, and I've heard this from several sources, that the commercial world is moving rapidly toward OpenID Connect and from SAML, much faster than the academic community is moving, which is not surprising because it's been used more heavily sort of in the academic community.
Yeah, and I think you were there, I wasn't. The consensus from the Internet 2 discussion was that as federations and the federation operators, we want OpenID Connect federations, we just don't want them yet.
Right.
We just don't want them quick enough. So.
Yeah. I got the impression from Internet 2 did a survey among a number of universities and sort of within the US, and it seemed like the pressure to move to OpenID Connect was from the grassroots, I mean from the users, because they saw, in order for them to use services, commercial services, were like they had to use OpenID Connect because the services weren't supporting anything else. So that's it.
Just one more question.
No, keep on.
No, that's so much better than when I did the course, there was no one asking for the question.
Right.
Okay, then I can ask one.
Yes.
So with the OpenID Connect Federation, does the service provider, I'm stick with some
yes,
terms.
Yes, do.
So should the service provider be federation aware, or can any kind of OpenID Connect implementation go? Only the identity provider shall deal with metadata and authenticating the service provider.
So the service provider is always starting the communication. Like if you do discovery, for instance, it's the RP does discovery, the OP answers. When it comes to registration, it's the RP that asks and the OP that answers. So if the RP, when it sends the, or actually sort of when the RP asks for this discovery information and it finds metadata statement or metadata statement URI parameters, it knows that this OP is federation aware. If the RP doesn't understand that, it just ignores it because the standard says it should. And then it will do normal OpenID Connect, not the federation stuff. But if it knows the federation stuff, it will answer back when it does the registration. It will have this type of information in the registration information. And then the OP knows that the RP is also federation aware. So it hasn't broken anything. So
I guess the answer is that the RP can talk with the OP irrespective of the federation, but not within the federation context. So there won't be any trust.
Right.
To know that they can work together. And it's also the OP can be... Could that be that the OP says, I only want to deal with entities that I can... that I have a trust anchor within the federation?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So
yes.
that case, the RP should be federation aware, because the OP might select to not interoperate with RPs that are not within the same federation or within the same federations that the OP participates in.
So this is a list, this is an array, and this is an object actually. Actually, we're probably going to change this to also be an object, not just an array. But it means that the OP can actually belong to several federations, and same for the RP. So what it means in the second hand is that the OP says, okay, I belong to these federations. Then the RP says, okay, we have these federations in common. And then eventually when the OP answers for the registration, in the registration response, it says, okay, this is what we'll use. So there is a sort of a discussion about which federation should we use for our continuous discussion or communication. What I wanted to make also, and it hasn't sort of been probably obvious, is that I want to make it easy to create federations. If you have a big multinational project, you should have your own federation, for instance. If you have a special sort of interest group within your country, you should be able to create a special federation for that. You shouldn't have to have this hierarchical federation structure we have today. You should have sort of federations left and right, up and down, sort of any which way.
And so that makes it very easy to work in multiple federations in a, if I can say, full mesh way.
Yeah.
That's really pretty neat about it.
So, I mean, we're seeing that now with SAML Federation, there are a number of organizations or projects that have a problem because they span so many federations, sort of, and they don't get the attribute releases or anything like that they need. This should hopefully make it simpler for that to work. Okay, I'm done. And you're done too. I can see it. But
I can promise it will be easier tomorrow.
Easier tomorrow.
So I can get to play the nice guy.
So.
Thank you, Roland. I think... then only the dinner is what will be next, and I think we should meet in front of this building quarter to seven, or go there if someone
wants to. Reservation
at seven. Yes. So it's around 9 minutes from here by walk. So it's very close. Okay. Thank you again.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.